What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
Shalom, Bitcoin Rabbi, aka Michael Karas, author of the wonderful book Bitcoin Money, A Tale of Bitville, Discovering Good Money. This book is great for everyone of all ages. Obviously, I've read it to my own kids, but I've given it to my parents, co-workers at the office under the sly guise that it's a book about money for them to read with their kids. And it really helps everyone just understand the history of money at a really fundamental level through allegory. Bitcoin Rabbi, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me. Thank you for that wonderful, very kind introduction. I'm very glad to hear that the way you described it as to give it to your friends and coworkers under the guise that it's meant for their children. You caught the point exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I really love it in that way. Sometimes it's for the kids. Sometimes I'm just like, hey, maybe this will get through to you and it's for you. But I've used it both. It's really one of my favorite books to hand out. I think it's very cheerful and approachable for everyone. But like I said, it really gets at some deep stuff and history. You kind of drop a lot of history in there very slyly for adults, I think, and anyone above maybe like 12. But I read it with my six-year-old and my four-year-old and now my six-year-old, eight. He just turned eight. And we read it like every couple months. So one of the first questions right at the top of the head, what is a rabbi? What does it mean to be a rabbi?
So a rabbi is a teacher. That's what it comes down to. I guess the original rabbi was Moses, and he was the teacher of the Jewish people originally when they received the Torah. So a teacher of Torah. So I studied in rabbinical school where we learned Jewish law, Jewish practice, ethics, and my profession is I am a teacher. I teach in to elementary, middle school, really all across the whole age gamut, as well as adult classes. So that is what I do. I've got some other hobbies and other things, but I've been a rabbi and teaching for the past decade.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember or recall, but, we go back to July 2019 when I DM'd you for help. You're my Bitcoin rabbi. I was moving through, kind of like I came for the gains and I stayed for the hard money and the value of being able to transport value through time and space. But then I was like, oh, shoot, how do I take care of this stuff? How do I secure it? How do I become a real Bitcoiner? And I had, very simple questions, but I didn't really want to go on Twitter and kind of shout those out. And I didn't want to just DM anybody. And, I felt for some reason I just felt comfortable DMing you. And you got back to me within 7 minutes.
All right. I don't always manage to do that. I go off.
Sure.
Sometimes I go offline for a couple of days, but I'm glad that worked out. I remember that conversation. And then when we got reconnected recently to plan for this, for this podcast, I was like, oh, wow. Cause sometimes I've just talked to people for the first time they've been doing a podcast, but then I saw that we already had connected and I was really pleased to see that you had progressed and have really dug deep and grew into it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's funny. I look back on those DMs. I'm kind of embarrassed. I was like, I just bought a Trezor. What do I do? And I was already kind of almost, I wanted to move past like a single hardware wallet, even though I had already bought the Trezor. And I was thinking about multi-sig and kind of how to get into that. And I was like, but as I get into the multi-sig, I'll set up this Trezor anyway, just throw some sats on there and see what it's about. And I was like, oh, do I have to, smash up my computer when I'm done with this? Like the Winklevoss twins. And you were like, hey, dude, we've moved a long way past all of that since you heard that story. And you kind of walked me through it. And I really appreciate that, because, the whole don't trust, verify. So it wasn't like this was part of the verification process, was talking to someone else and trying to find the most trustful person I could speak with.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. Everybody has to, you know, it's everyone needs to learn at some point and needs to have somebody that, you know, you don't, there's different levels of trust. You can trust somebody that, and they can teach you something, but then just to point you in the right direction, and then you learn it yourself. And I've also had some of those embarrassing to look back at. I recently wanted to go back and find the very first time I ever discussed Bitcoin and like my earliest conversations. This was before I was on Twitter, even, and the kind of questions I remember there, and I saw the dialogue that I said, you know, what's a wallet? Right. I'm like, I've got my exchange account. What do you mean I need a wallet now? And just to see that from, you know, that was 2017 when I first got involved. And it's funny now to see how much things have changed with the space and with myself.
Sure.
Everything.
Yeah, I think we got involved around the same time, even though I don't know this all the specifics of yours. You know, it's interesting. You know, I'm Jewish. You know, I grew up Jewish. I went to Hebrew school. I'm not Orthodox. I'm secular. Is probably, I don't like labels, but maybe that's the terminology. But there's, you know, a Hillel quote that really has always spoken to me, and it's spoken to me since my youth. But it's really kind of like come back to the surface recently. I saw it on Bitcoin Twitter, at least part of it or something close to it. And it's kind of come up in a theme when I talk to friends and family. And the, you know, the parable is if I am not for myself, who is for me? And being for my own self, what am I? And if not when? If not now, when? And I've always actually, I've kind of maybe even not really thought much about the third part or even heard it as much, but then it's say not when I have free time I shall study, for you may perhaps never have any free time. And the struggle here is kind of like when I try to get this point across to friends and family, like I think they think it sounds selfish, you know, and not caring about others and things like charity.
Right. So I would absolutely say it's a, you know, it is a beautiful and one a powerful quote from Hillel, one of the great sages of Jewish history. And I wouldn't take it so much as being selfish, but it's more about that you can't wait for somebody else to make things happen for you. You have to take initiative, and you can't just wait, you know, if not now, then when. So it's not saying only worry about yourself, only, you know, be concerned. I mean, that's the antithesis to all of Torah. And Hillel is also known for the famous teaching of that which is hateful to your fellow, don't do to your fellow that which is hateful to yourself. This is the entirety of the Torah. The rest is commentary. So certainly he was not a person personally, and the entire thing of the Torah is not just saying that a person should just lock themselves up and only be concerned for themselves. But this was about that a person can't just sit by and wait and expect things are going to fall in their lap. They need to take the initiative. And then once you do that, then you can go and help other people. You can't really be a giver if you're a taker, you know, at least at the same time. If you're sitting and waiting for things to fall on your lap, then you can't really be out there and helping and doing things to other people and doing things for other people. So I think that's how you can fit both of those things and explain it in a way that's positive and would match those criticisms.
Right. How do you see Bitcoin and Judaism lining up?
So there are some comparisons between the technology of the way of the blockchain that I found were fascinating from the beginning, that the Judaism really is, I think in lots of ways it mirrors the same way that the blockchain functions, in that it has this, it's about passing on truth from generation to generation, and it has this methodology that people can come to consensus, and there's like a proof of work system, there's a rule set. You know, I go through all of you know, how the rabbis, they're like the miners, and there's the full nodes are the average person that everyone is able to. It's not just that the rabbis have all of the knowledge and everyone else is left in the dust, but every person has that individual responsibility to verify for themselves and to study and become a knowledgeable person. So those are like in the esoteric kind of ethical ideas. But I also, one of the things that I think is important about Bitcoin is I just think that it's a fair system. I think that one of the problems with the fiat financial system is that it favors people that it's not democratic. It's not equitable. I think that it's fully just. And so I think that the thing about Bitcoin is that it treats everyone equally and fairly. No one has an advantage over anybody else. And so I think that's a ethical system to be on. And I think that it would be beneficial if that was more how our generally financial system worked.
Yeah. You know, another one of my all-time favorite, Jewish parables is whoever destroys one soul, it is as though he had destroyed the entire world. And whoever saves a life, it is as though he had saved the entire world. And I kind of think about like how, you know, we go through Bitcoin and we save ourselves first, you know, and we opt out there. And that is saving the world in a way. It's the most you can do. I think in these very turbulent and confusing times, you know, that's kind of grounding. And I'm wondering, that's kind of like we've talked a little bit about Bitcoin through the lens of Judaism. Has Bitcoin changed your understanding of Judaism or enhanced it? Or are there certain maybe things that have kind of come to light since coming to Bitcoin and then applying it to Judaism?
So first I'll just comment on that teaching that you just shared about saving a life. That's practically about the great importance of the individual and to basically not consider it's just if you can save one person, if you can do focus on one person, to not think that that's just a small matter, but we're not just a conglomerate of people. We're each individuals and each have, you know, a soul and are of immense importance. And so you can compare that with whether you're literally saving somebody's life or if you're just helping them financially or education wise, you know, to not think, oh, I'm only doing it for one person. What's the big deal? That even if you're just helping one person, that is massively important. One, you don't know what effect it's going to have downstream, but even if it doesn't have some noticeable massive effect, just that one person on them individually is greatly important. As far as the thing about being a rabbi that's trained and involved with Judaism, I would have to say my understanding is very deep, and my belief and faith and commitment is so. Bitcoin's a technology. I enjoy lots of different types of technologies. I've always been, that's one of the reasons that I got into Bitcoin, is that I've been a kind of a tech geek, if you will. Like I've liked ever since a kid, whatever kind of new gadgets that were coming out and trying to understand things. It's I don't think that it's the, it's not my religion. It's not the core of my identity is that Bitcoin is a better money system. But just like, an email or the internet or some other thing, I think it's profound. I think that it's positive. But, the being Jewish and being a rabbi is the core of who I am. And I wouldn't say that Bitcoin changes that. I would say that it doesn't conflict with it. And generally, the way the prism of how a rabbi looks at life is they see things in the world and they see what's the Jewish perspective of looking at this, and not saying, does this change my Judaism? So that's kind of how I take it.
Right. I love the book. I love how it starts with, kind of like the Socratic method, and the kids are trying to figure out how to relate and deal with each other. And one of my favorite parts is that this kind of like, there's this organic conversation around how to interact and trade. And they all kind of get excited to bring things to the community and add value. And I just love that kind of like entrepreneurial bent, you know. And then there's a lot of like kind of like it feels like, you know, Bitcoin is for the children. Bitcoin is for the kids. I get that through a lot of your work. And I think that's really interesting. And what I was really trying to get at was like, also you said something along the lines of like, every child born after the Genesis block on January 3rd, 2009 are just going to get it. And that
yeah,
sounds,
I totally think so.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds, I don't think it sounds optimistic. It just makes me feel optimistic. You know, I think it sounds true.
I think they'll get it for a few reasons. One is the, for the technological, that they just, I think that there's a block for, a mental block for older people, a lot of older people, of a new technology and the idea that money could just be a technology. And so the kids, I mean, you've got kids, I've got kids, they think everything is a touchscreen. They Wi-Fi is not, you know, is the norm for them. They're connected all the time, always, you know, the internet is just pervasive. And so being born in this digital era, I think is something. And then I think that if they are financially introduced to it, and not just introduced to Bitcoin, but they've known digital money, digital currency, whether it's real digital money like Apple Pay or Cash App or something like that, like something that actually has financial value, or just the alternative of video game play money, whether it was you were in the 90s and they were the Neopet points, or in the World of Warcraft gold, or rupees in Zelda, or coins in Mario or something, or whatever, V-Bucks in Fortnite. It's the fact that there's digital money is going to be the norm. And then the economic system of Bitcoin is going to just be inevitable that they're going to get that. So I think it's mostly that adults have to unlearn a lot of things to get to Bitcoin, and kids are just going to learn it generally in the right direction in the first place.
Yeah. One of my favorite lines in the book that I think is awesome for adults, but like I love telling it to my kids. You can print more money, but you can't print more hard work. I think that's
kind of one of the principles of Austrian economics, is that by just printing more currency, all you're doing is, I mean, all we really want are goods and services. We want capital, and printing more currency doesn't produce that. It's just moving the numbers around. It doesn't actually make any more goods and services. People need to go out and do that, which is why if you can't print yourself out of a depression, or, you know, it just leads to inflation, and so there's not value added there. So I'm not a professional economist. That's how I, you know, learned it from what studies that I've done, is that you have to actually, people need to save and need to work, and that's where the value comes from.
Yeah. You know, one of the other things you said, I think on one of the pods I listened to, was, you know, bad ideas die over a generation. And you know, we're kind of getting that tested out with Bitcoin now. We're going through the first generation. You know, I think it's obviously a success. But it made me think, you know, to something I heard, you know, from a rabbi of mine who said, you know, Judaism has been around, you know, for 99 generations. And it's kind of like, you know, and I think that's where you kind of get your full grounding. And how does like the Sabbath play into your life, into Bitcoin, and, you know, the notion of like Bitcoin being 24/7?
Yeah. So I appreciate Sabbath so much, really a lot now, with not besides for Bitcoin and for the trading of it, which I'm not a trader, but I still, you know, follow the price movement and the news of it and whatever the drama is and stuff. So getting a break from that, I go completely offline and you know, shut off the computers and the phones and everything for about 25 hours every single week. And I recommend people do it, whether they're Jewish, whether they're religious or not, or anything. I think that it's just a good idea to get a break from all of this things that can be a distraction, and focus time on, you know, yourself, your family, your soul, you know, whatever it is that you need. I think it's a huge thing. Yeah, Bitcoin just, I mean, lots of things are running all the time.
Yeah.
The world is a busier place than it ever has been. So it can be overwhelming. So it's definitely a great idea for people to take a break.
Yeah. Speaking of overwhelming, 2020, you know, the other day, I think it was a week or two ago, there was some videos coming out of Muncie. You know, cops kind of like visiting a house that had too many people. And I saw that, I think, on the web. And I kind of like tried to kind of ignore it at first to see maybe how that played out, because I never know really at first glance, or, you know, when these first things pop up, what the full context is. But then I think you retweeted it, which kind of laid a lot of gravity to it for me, like made it seem more real and kind of more concerned. What do you see going on in Muncie and maybe Brooklyn?
Yeah, so I don't live either. Muncie is a pretty heavily Orthodox Jewish community north of Manhattan. I lived in Brooklyn for some years, but I'm not there now. I think that there are, you know, there are definitely issues with how the Jewish community feels that they're being treated. You know, it's a very complex subject. It's so complex because everybody's got different opinions about how COVID is going with the lockdowns, how you know, government involvement is, how people are taking care of it, and then different people, how things are being measured. There's so much complexity to it. So I know that there is an overwhelming, the Jewish community, whether they did some different sides of it agree or disagree on how well they're doing at following the guidelines or whatever, the government restrictions and the social distancing and the masks and stuff, and how important that is or not important. There are lots of things about that, different opinions, and I'm not really interested in coming down on one side or another. Sure. But they pretty much across the board feel that there has been inconsistency with the enforcement and the language that's been used by politicians regarding the Jewish community. And so they're not pleased with the mayor of New York City, with the governor of New York. And I can definitely see that. And they're seeing the downstream effect of more animosity being hurled at visibly Jewish people in the city from other neighbors in the city. So it's not a great situation. I don't think that the government in New York has handled that particularly well, or in general, the whole COVID thing well. We'd still rather be in America and in New York than and pretty much anywhere else in the world than in Europe or anything. It's not, you know, I don't want to over exaggerate it that we don't feel like our lives are being threatened, you know, by the government, but it's not pleasant. It's definitely not a pleasant thing. And I hope that there are, once cooler things called cool down, that there are some efforts made to repair those relationships between, you know, the community and the government.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, we spoke to Ali Hammam of Teeny Restaurants here, and I've listened to and read the book, Bitcoin in Black America. And something that kind of touched on there is just like the strength of different communities and communities having their own, you know, circular economy. And the Jewish community is known for having, I don't know about known, but like I see it, and I think it's known as having its own circular, insular, and I don't use that as a bad word here. I use a compliment, its own economy, which gives it strength on its own streets and its own turf. And the ability to regulate or govern itself or kind of maintain itself You'd be more localized.
Yeah, I mean, they do. The Jewish community in Brooklyn has its own, it does have its own economy, like you said. And they have, meaning they run their own schools.
Right.
You know, everyone goes to private schools. So they have their own schools. They have their own ambulances. They have their own security forces. They have their own, there are courts that are used for inter-community issues. You know, basically everything that government provides, you know, in general, the communities do for themselves, which I think, you know, that's also part of the idea of Bitcoin is that I generally think that having less government and especially less that it should be from the, you know, federal government top down, controlling our lives in the minuscule, the less of that, the better, the more that we can just kind of live our own lives with our own neighbors. And instead of using this, a financial system, which is governed and controlled by some unelected people in Washington, D.C., you know, let's just use an algorithm that's pretty much fair. And I mean, if people want to choose it to use Bitcoin, they can. If they don't want to, then they can use something else. But that I like the fact that it takes away power from the federal government in regards of that. Money is just something we use. It's in part of everyday life for everyone. The idea that we are using something that got a stamp of approval from the federal government and has a signature of some of there just seems like bizarre. Why does it need, you know, if I buy, you know, my groceries, I don't see why I need, you know, some stamp of approval and some direct involvement of it. Of everything I do in my daily life. I think it's better if people are more localized in their actions and their decisions.
Yeah. I think, you know, I want to implore all communities to kind of like emulate that example and notion. Cause it is just, I mean, they literally could just use their own money if they wanted to and exclude all, you know, externalities to as much as they want. I mean, they have their own like you were saying, their own clothing stores, their own schools, their own ambulances, their own security.
Well, it's because courts. They are you're not always a community with your neighbors, just right. Because you live around people. They're specifically a community because they are very strongly connected by their belief and by their values and their practices, meaning everybody's kind of eating the same kind of food and wearing the same similar whatever. Generally speaking, there's a lot of overlap, and so you can have these have this kind of a circular economy because everybody's working and buying and selling from each other because they have the wares that each other wants.
Right. Where are you on gold these days? Are you still bearish?
I bearish, I think, implies some kind of like trading prediction or anything. I'm long term. I don't see any reason to invest in gold myself. I don't own any gold whatsoever. And yeah, it just seems like it's not that. You know, it's slow. It's dumb. Like I'm in the opposite of intelligent sense of the word. And I just don't think. I think that Bitcoin is a superior store of value, and so I think that it's going to swallow up from the other stores of value. So right. I think priced in Bitcoin, I don't think that gold has a future, and I personally am not involved in it.
Sure. I think I heard it from Bitcoin Tina, where he talked about, you know, in biblical times, there was the sort of the advice of have like 30% of your wealth in your business, 30% in your home, and 30% in gold, which was just the equivalent of cash today, which I see as like Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think it's actually so the I have to look back at that. It's quoted a lot, but in the Bitcoin world of the more than gold is mentioned in Jewish texts is actually silver, because silver was much more common. The word for money in Hebrew is silver. Silver was the currency, the common currency. Gold was a store of value, but it was more of a wealthier store of value, meaning just same, you know, how much gold could a average person own versus how much silver could they own and how could they, you know, interact. So all of the coins are primarily the coins of of the Talmudic times were all silver, and gold was a more removed type of money. I mean, it's still a money. It still was a value, but it was not as common, and definitely not as common once we got into the coinage.
Right. You know, it's what's going on with Lightning for you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to spend Bitcoin, but I'm totally decked out on Lightning. Yeah. I mean, I was on the Noted podcast, with Pierre and Bitstein, and I was saying that 2019 was like the year of Lightning experimentation for me. Like, I was just all the time. I downloaded every wallet. I tried everything. I set up BTC Pay server. I set up my my store when I sold the book. So that was really 2019. And then I kind of like, I did everything that I needed to do. I'm not really spending that much Bitcoin, barely ever, or doing so many transactions. I'm just like, you know, hodling. And so this year I've been more focused on multi-sig. I've been that a lot more new multi-sig wallets have come to the market. And so that's what I've been more exploring, the different types and different ways to do multi-sig. So I like Lightning. I use it when I need to, and it pretty much works like as much as I need it to. But I don't recommend people. I'm very opposed to the using Bitcoin in commerce and spending Bitcoin. So I don't really do that.
Yeah. But okay, so but like forget about spending it. But like, what do you think Lightning is going to enable down the road, or like kind of bring about?
It's hard to imagine what's new. I still think that in the long term, a lot of people are going to be satisfied with custodial options for small amounts, because it's just. If you're talking about spending, you know, between you and your grocery store, like I still think that they're in the long term or in a very long amount of time, credit cards are still going to be thing. Like it, even assuming that we come to, you know, the moon scenario where Bitcoin is the world reserve currency, I still think that there will be some kind of fiat currencies or something like that, or even currencies that are pegged to Bitcoin that are some kind of custodial or semi-custodial. So I don't know if Lightning, I'm sure it will have some place, but I think that there are plenty of other options. Like, for example, Liquid, the Liquid network from Blockstream, is essentially custodial. Now, the way that they, you know, kind of explain that it's not is that it's custodial across a dozen different in a multi-sig that's held by a dozen different people. So the game theory is that they're not going to take your funds, or there's conflict between them that they're not going to collude and take your funds. But that is essentially like, in some ways it's simpler than using Lightning, but you know, that there's different trade-offs. So I like Lightning. I think it's very cool. I use it. I've got all the wallets. I've tried all the wallets. I still experiment with it, but I don't know exactly which role it's going to fit in versus other alternatives.
Right. Do you think Bitcoin is inevitable? Its success?
Yeah. Like in my heart of hearts, I do. I just don't see anything that's going to stop it. But I guess that's just like, I don't really have any real basis. Like, I can't say I know for sure. I don't know anything. But if you ask me, you know, what does my heart believe? I think that it's inevitable. I'm quite an optimist. I've got a very optimistic view of the future. And so I think that the world's going to get better. And I think that Bitcoin is part of it getting better.
Right. So then what does, you know, hyper Bitcoinization mean to you?
Yeah, either. So probably a Bitcoin backed or Bitcoin pegged government currency or something like that that people are using day to day, or like bank currency or something. It's hard to tell because it all depends on how the governments respond, when they respond, and how they respond. And I'm not sure, but it still can be that people can, that when you have the option, I mean, right now, what I say about fiat and or inflationary fiat when printing money, no one voted for that. No one said, there was never a time in American history where we said, okay, should we print more money and give it to XYZ, or should we just keep, you know, the amount of money that we have? Like, no one ever got to vote to go off the gold standard. Like, it seemed like everybody at the time thought it was a fine idea. When you have two options between an inflationary or deflationary money, the people that want to save are going to have that opportunity to save in a deflationary currency, which, let's say, if Bitcoin is worth $1 million or $10 million or something, and then it will, compared to an inflationary currency, it will accrue value at whatever X percent per year in a fairly stable manner. I can just imagine it's something like that, that Bitcoin is what you use for savings, and the people that want to save their money do that. And maybe there are certain markets that specifically are using Bitcoin, and other markets that either by size or by location or something that you're using either, like I said, government currencies or something else.
Something that just popped into my head as you were talking there is, how does Judaism and democracy bump up against each other?
That's a good question. Pretty much every rabbi in modern day will say that that Jews have to be involved in the democracy of their society, and that it's part of showing your appreciation for the country, that if they ask you, you know, what's your opinion, you should tell them what your opinion is and give a choice, knowing that one, the amount that your vote makes a difference is somewhat negligible, and the choices that you have in front of you are maybe not ideal. But even just the very fact of participating is showing that you are appreciative of that they're giving you some amount of say, even if it's nominal. So I have always voted and participated in the democratic process. I mean, like I said previously, America is undoubtedly the best experience for a Jew living in the past 2,000 years. It's called in Hebrew the Medina Shel Chesed, the country of kindness. So it's been I can't complain. I mean, I can talk about how terrible fiat currencies are and government overreach are, but I mean, I'm speaking more generally about government and where it's more affected other places in the world. And I'm glad that I hasn't gotten so, you know, out of control in America. Is it the absolute best? They've been debating on Twitter recently about democracy versus monarchies. And I haven't studied I haven't read the books that have been sent out. So I don't know. I don't have a strong opinion one way or another, because it's not something that I studied. But as far as, I guess that's, I living in a freer country is definitely a better thing. And whether freedom correlates to democracy or isn't correlated, I haven't researched enough about that to debate it one way or another.
Yeah, so much just came to thought there. You know, Jews, you could argue, involuntarily built the pyramids, and we're kind of still having that debate around slavery now. We, you know, we're probably the first to be ghettoized in Venice.
The majority of history for the majority of people in the world has been pretty bad. I mean, compared to how presumably you and I live in our current day, most people who have lived most time throughout history had pretty miserable lives, and particularly, you know, Jews throughout that throughout history being, you know, exiled from their native land and being, you know, strangers and foreigners. So that's why we pretty much, our rule is wherever we are, where they're treating us nicely and not, you know, killing us en masse, we show our appreciation.
Right. I mean, Passover, Pesach is the story of freedom. Exodus. You know, what came to mind also was Masada. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to go to Israel, I guess, a few times, and I've climbed Masada. And, you know,
so that's a plateau, like mountaintop in southern Israel when the Romans were basically destroying the kingdom of Judah in the about 2000 years ago. And it was like one of the last final standoffs where a group of Jews that live there died, committed mass suicide rather than submitting to being enslaved by the Romans.
Right. Sort of like democratic majoritarian. They were kind of just against. I guess that might not be the way.
Well,
to put it,
I mean,
they were
Rome
just really...
was a, Rome was an empire at right. that point, and I mean, it's a complicated history of what, sure. how, why Rome. I mean, Rome was colonizing everywhere, and why they did, and who fought back, right. and what should have been done. I mean, it's complex. I don't know how much total parallel it has to like what yeah, we are now. But yeah, in general, overreach of government has been a bad thing for Jews generally. Throughout history,
right.
So that's one of the reasons why I just naturally, you know, see things as if it takes government a little bit farther away from the involvement in the day-to-day life of people, I think that's generally a better thing.
Right. What's it like discussing Bitcoin with members of your community?
So, you know, the younger ones range from either being generally interested or skeptical. And like I said, I've kind of older people are just, they're not negative. They're not like, oh, this is a terrible thing. But they're kind of just don't seem to really even get it enough and aren't even that interested enough to want to get it. They're kind of like, I'll just pass on this. It's leave it for the next generation. That's the experience that I have. And so that's what I kind of developed my perspective of like, okay, you know, fine. There, some people just aren't going to get it. And the younger somebody, there's a pretty strong correlation with how young a person is and how well they're going to understand Bitcoin.
Yeah. I mean, any you know, parting words, you know, for the Bitcoiners listening?
Yeah, I mean, the reason I'm here in Bitcoin is for two things. I want to show, you'd mentioned their name is escaping me, but the shawarma restaurant that recently you know got involved in Bitcoin, and yeah, what's their name?
Tahini's.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think it's great that different people of different communities are finding their way to Bitcoin and saying, hey, listen, they're Muslim. And I spoke to them a little bit, and they gave their perspective from Islam about why they think Bitcoin is good. And then the Bitcoin in Black America, I think that it's a great thing that different people from all over are saying, you know what, I'm this, and I've got my values here, and Bitcoin works for me. And so I think that the Jewish community definitely needed somebody to be that voice, you know, and so that I've been happy to fill that, to show, you know, for Bitcoiners to know that, you know, there's a whole world of people out here and people involved in Bitcoin, and that it's something that can unite different types of people. And for the Jewish people, you know, I also trying to make myself available to them, and I hope they come more. I do get questions and from Jewish people more, that I not ones that I personally know, but kind of referrals, friend of a friend or something. It's the, if somebody, a Jewish person, especially an Orthodox Jewish person, is looking to get into Bitcoin, they'll find their way to me somehow. And for questions. So I'm happy to be doing that. I hope I can continue. I like to make myself available and people ask me questions, religious questions, Bitcoin questions. And it's been a blast. You know, it has been, it continues to be. I really love the Bitcoin community, and I love what our goal is together, which is to educate, to give people the freedom to take care of their Bitcoin themselves, to save some, to take care of their families. It should continue. Everyone should be well and healthy and wealthy.
Right. I one more question. On the long arc, you know, of time, is the world healing?
Yes. In the long arc of time, regardless of what CNN says or anything, and regardless of the election this week, yes, the perspective of the world is, you probably heard the phrase tikkun olam, you know, that the world was, I mean, it goes back to Adam and Eve, you know, the world was started as a broken place and it's needed to be, fixed. And all of us have our role in that. And there's been hiccups along the way, and there's been steps forward and steps back. But I think that the massive amount of technology, of communication, of education, of wellness, of medicine, and all of these things, of energy, I think that we look at it now and take it all for granted. But I think that these are signs of that we're coming up to a point of incredible just peace and prosperity and goodness for the world. I think we're just right on the cusp of it. And I think that maybe sometimes the news of the day or the drama of the day makes people, I mean, not everyone agrees with that. Some people have more negative views of it, but I think a lot of people could agree with that, but they get distracted by some whatever small time news thing of the day.
Yeah. As a Jew, I was raised, you know, to be a truth seeker. And, you know, I think Bitcoin is a fountain of truth for myself. I don't know if it's an extension of truth seeking or is truth for me. And just another Jewish, you know, Hebrew quote, you know, don't trust yourself until the day you die. Don't trust, verify. I can't tell you how much I've been looking forward to this since July of 2019. This has been so incredible. I really love having the Bitcoin Rabbi, in my corner.
I'm glad to be in the corner with you. I'm glad, and the corner's growing. It's getting bigger.
It's getting huge.
Soon everyone's going to be in this corner. So we'll
right. Well, you're everyone's rabbi then. And so dope. I really appreciate it. Shalom.
Shalom. Shalom.
Peace.
I want to thank my teacher, my spiritual advisor, and everyone's Bitcoin Rebbe, the Bitcoin Rabbi, for his words of wisdom and levity that he dropped right here on the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. And thank you for listening. If you dig the chats, vote with your thumbs and press 5 stars in that app and subscribe to our brand new YouTube channel. That's the best way to get the word out so we can keep grinding out thought-provoking conversations about Bitcoin. This is said. Peace out.